On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, it is our reaction show. It was a big weekend in boxing. Teofimo Lopez got a win, but he did not look great. Terrence Crawford, spectacular knockout. Luis Alberto Lopez, big upset over Josh Warrington. And we'll also preview the monster. He is back. Nioa Inoue taking on Paul Butler. Let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. My co-host, as always, every single week, Chris Algieri, former 140-pound champ, current beats up on John Boy employees. Chris, you're back in Florida. I'm in New York. How's it going?
Good, good. It's good to be back. The weather here is absolutely perfect. It was a little chilly in New York for me, but it was a good week. We got a lot done. I got to hang out with a lot of the John Boy office people and yes. All the content creators. Made a lot of new friends.
Maybe some enemies. I doubt it, but more friends than enemies. I posted on social media. Chris did as well. We shot our first ever John Boy Media Boxing Combine, where we had four content creators going through a boxing workout. Winner goes on to fight Chris in one round. I'm not going to reveal who won the combine. You're going to have to tune in and watch, but it was a blast, and you're going to be able to catch that on the Inside Boxing Live YouTube page. That was friggin' awesome. So it was a fun week. It was a fun weekend. I was at the Garden on Saturday night, ringside. That was fun to be back there and see some familiar faces and watch a fun night of fights. There were fights all over the globe, as usual, on the weekends. Let's start in Omaha, Nebraska. Terrence Crawford, spectacular knockout over David Avanesyan, sixth round, 14,000 fans in Nebraska. Didn't think that was going to be an issue for Buddy. Always sells there. It's actually the highest attendance he's ever had in Nebraska, higher than the Ndongo fight and some of the other ones he had there. So he can still sell tickets. I thought the pay-per-view production looked fine. There were some skeptics out there at BLK Prime. The call was good with Todd Grisham and Paulie and Tarver. But what's most important is Terrence Crawford in the ring, in there for the first time in a very long time, back and up and I wouldn't say up and down, but a very good performance. Chris, what are your thoughts? Because who cares what I think?
Right. So I watched it after the fact. You know, there's a lot of fights going on last night. I had to catch it earlier this morning. You know, so the first thing I saw, obviously, was the spectacular knockout. So I'm like, oh, okay. You know, man, Terrence is a bad man. Let me get into watching it. And I was very surprised that the fight was you know, the knockout doesn't tell the whole story of the fight, obviously. Mm-hmm. Avanesyan was in there. He landed a lot of shots. Terrence chose to fight majority of the fight out of his southpaw stance. He fought in the pocket. And he was getting clipped with overhand rights and left hooks. I like the style that Avanesyan. I'm sorry.
Chance. After today, I don't think we'll be saying his name much again.
Yeah, I don't think so. But it's still, I'd like to show the man some respect. I like the style that he employed. He came in under that tight guard and he's throwing looping shots over the top. Was able to catch Terrence with a bunch of right hands and left hooks, especially early on. But as it went, Terrence is constantly accruing data, calculating, analyzing, and start picking his spots and getting that much more precise and finding that one perfect shot. And the sixth round, he did it. He found it, and he iced him, put him on his back.
That was
scary. Didn't even try to beat the count.
Scary knockout. And you're right. He kind of lulled him to sleep. And that sequence right before the knockout was something that I think a lot of trainers would teach, you know, in tight. Shoulders tight, rolling with the puncher, then pa-pa, quick one, mm-hmm. two. Was hammering to the body before that. First couple of rounds, you're right, Avanesyan was applying a lot of pressure. He actually had Crawford on his heels a little bit in the first four rounds. Crawford came out orthodox, and he turned to southpaw. An active Crawford inside of the ring. 602 punches thrown. He threw 70 jabs around. He threw 92 jabs in the second round. That's the tie to Compton Bucks welterweight record. Like, that's something we've never seen from Crawford. Yes, he was throwing it out there as like a range finder, but still, as you told me numerous times, that still is an effective punch, even if it's not landing. I thought Crawford was more active. And then in the fifth and sixth round is when he started to pick it up. And then he gets a spectacular highlight reel knockout. But now it comes down to, you know what? Like, I just, all right, 18 months out of the ring, you know, the whole saga with Spence, no one wanted to see Evanescian in there. No disrespect to him, but this is not the fight we want to see. 35 years old now, first fight in 18 months. I want only big opponents for Terrence Crawford from here on out. I think a lot of boxing fans and media can agree there. I want him active too, because this guy is spectacular watch. Everything outside of the ring, you know, we've all talked about it. I've criticized it, business moves, this, that, and the other. Inside of the ring, he is a top five talent and one of the best fighters to watch, because he does so many things in there that are spectacular, and he gives you the knockouts that you crave.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you mentioned a very important point, 35 years of age. Now, this is a little bit of an inside boxing, inside baseball, you know, idea from my standpoint, watching him in that fight. Now, is it the 18-month layoff? Is it the opponent that he had in front of him? Is it a tactic that he was staying in the pocket, allowing his opponent to kind of be lulled to sleep in the fact that, hey, I'm in this fight. Maybe he didn't expect to be. Let him drop his guard a little bit so I can land that one shot. I don't know. I think it could be the age. I think it could be, you know, these younger physical guys are coming forward. They're able to land shots that they never could have. We've never seen Terrence get hit with shots like that earlier years or when he was a little bit younger. So it's either, you know, it's age either way. It's either age in the fact that he's not reacting as well, or it's age in that he's like, you know what? This is the way that I fight now. I'm not going to be as reactive. I don't need to work so hard not to get hit. I'll take a little bit to give that much more. And I'm finishing the fight anyway, so who cares? I don't know if that's going to be a great tactic against a guy like Errol Spence. I think if he fights the same style that he fought last night against Errol, he's going to have a hard time. I think Errol is way too physical for that. And he doesn't make the mistakes that Evanescian was making. Evanescian, I saw very early on, pulling straight up, which is exactly how we got knocked out. And I talked about Terrence's ability to analyze the data and take it as it's coming in. Evanescian's pulling up. How'd he get stopped? Left hook, boom, as he pulled up. Caught him on the chin, training shots, bang. Perfect timing, because he knew he was going to be there. He's been doing it all night long. Picking your head up. Errol Spence doesn't do that. He doesn't make mistakes like that. I think it's going to be very difficult for Terrence to stand in front of him, analyze, and do what he did to Evanescian.
Well, another thing with Spence, too, is he's very active. Almost 75 punches thrown around. Evanescian,
which is
wasn't...
what gives Terrence trouble. That's right. Evanescian was doing great.
Yeah, Evanescian didn't throw 75 around, but he still had Crawford on his heels. And who knows, like your theory on, is it age or is he goading him into the fight? Could be a combination of both. Yeah. You know, as
ultimately,
you get older, as you know, what'd you say?
I think ultimately that's really what it is. It's a combination of the two.
Right. Combination of both knowing that, you know, you're not a spring chicken anymore, and you got to figure out different tactics and use your strengths. And it's undoubtedly his strength is his power punching precision. I mean, this is now what, 8 or 9 knockouts in a row. He has this ability to just be so precise in there with those power shots, find the opening, you know, land his combinations in between his opponent's combinations. I mean, that was just like a textbook. Just such a quick knockout. You had to watch it 3 or 4 times to actually see the punch. That's how short and direct it was. I mean, that's what we wanted, right? We wanted to see a spectacular knockout. We want to get this out of the way. He makes $10 million, so they say. And now we can move on to hopefully the Spence fight or, you know, a Virgil Ortiz fight. Anyone at 147 who is considered elite, because this is what it's got to be for Crawford for the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, you know, speaking on the knockout, you know, it's a classic check hook. You know, they pull back, they traded shots. You let them run into the shot. Right hooks are so dangerous because they come from outside of your vision when you're fighting an orthodox fighter. That's what makes a southpaw who has a good right hand. Most of them are very left-handed dominant. When a southpaw has a good check hook, it's a very, very dangerous punch because you don't see it. The righty wants to hit you with the right hand and they run headfirst into that shot. It's a head-on collision. It's one of the hardest shots you can hit with is that check right hook from a southpaw position.
Yeah, so we saw a few new wrinkles from Terrence Crawford last night. You know, 600 punches in six rounds is something we haven't seen from Crawford. But how about this with Errol Spence? Absolutely bizarre and absolutely insane. Earlier in the day, a 14-year-old kid in Texas takes his dad's car out for a joyride and hits Errol Spence head on. Spence took to Instagram Live like literally right after the crash. His car was totaled. He came out of it unscathed. This guy, I mean, it's got more lives than a, you know, more, 9 lives than a cat. I don't know what the hell I just tried to say there. He's got more lives than a cat. Is that a saying?
Yeah, that is, cats generally, they think they have 9 lives. So yeah, he's got more lives than a cat. Listen, this guy's either the luckiest guy in the world or the most unlucky guy in the world, depending on how you slice it. But it just seems like the out of the ring stuff with him is one of the most dangerous aspects of his career.
Right.
In the ring, he's been so dominant. He's been so consistent over the years. You know, he's taken out top level guys welterweights year after year. But every year it's a new thing. There's some kind of outside of the ring issue that can be literally not only career ending, but life ending.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I hope we get to see those big fights from him. I think there's so much left for him to do if he can stay on his feet, so to speak.
Right. You know, obviously his other car accident was, you know, him driving drunk. This one is just a freak thing where a kid takes his dad's car out and, you know, smashes into him. Then, you know, the eye injury, which obviously stemmed from the first car accident. This is why we got to get these guys in the ring. We want to see this fight. You know, there's so much can happen, like you said, outside of life and all that. And, you know, it's great that Spence was fine and came out of that unscathed. Absolutely insane. For that to happen, too, on the day of when Crawford fights, I mean, these two are just going to be linked for the rest of their careers until they get into the ring. Hopefully that's next year.
Spence was still smart enough to drop his new clothing drop where he took a little jab at
I love
Crawford.
That
shirt is
with the meme,
the shark. Yeah, the meme shark walking past the Terrence Crawford. Looks like he's hiding.
Yeah, I love that.
They were still smart enough marketing wise to do that, even though he had an accident. But just a comment about the accident. I saw the car, right? That was a head on collision, and he came out quote unquote unscathed. But listen, car accidents are a whole different thing. The way that your body is thrust during a car accident at any type of speed, tissues move in a way that is not natural, and you could have micro shearing. That's what the eye thing that makes a lot of sense coming from an accident, going off that you have that kind of the tissue isn't used to that kind of intensity and changing of forces when you have a car accident. That's why back injuries are so common with car accidents.
Yeah,
you know, there could be injuries that we're not really aware of that Spence might not even be aware of. And that's another reason why, like you said, we need to get these guys fighting, get these guys in the ring together, because, you know, it's one for the ages.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. Let's move on to Top Rank card. I was there ringside Saturday night. Teofimo Lopez, let's start here. Split decision win over Sandor Martin. One judge had Lopez winning 8 of the 10 rounds. That clearly wasn't the case. Lopez went down in the second round. There was a slip later on that seemed like more of a knockdown than the first one. All in all, I thought Teofimo did not look good in there. I also do think he did enough to get the win. What do you think? Yeah. Did you think he won the fight? And what did you make of Teofimo Lopez's performance?
Ultimately, yes, I did have him winning the fight. He did not impress me. I believe he's regressed quite a bit.
Yes.
And Devin Haney put out a tweet and he said, Kambosos has ruined him. I disagree. I think Lomachenko ruined him. Ever since that fight, he has looked less and less impressive. And he was one of the guys that I've been the most high on. I love when he fights. I love watching his fights. I love calling his fights. Teofimo is a spectacular person to watch perform. But in recent years, ever since that Lomachenko fight, he just has not looked the same. And I don't know if it's because of just what happened from that thrust him into the spotlight the way it did. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy like him who's got so much talent, so many physical gifts, the issue is going to come up here. And it seems like that's really what happened with that Lomachenko win and everything around it moving up after that. I think he needs to get back to his roots. He needs to get back to his boxing. He was outboxed last night. It wasn't anything other than that. He fought very impatiently, which he's exactly how we fought Kambosos. He fought very come forward, looking for big shots, dropping his hands as he's throwing his right hand, lunging, jumping up in the air. There are times if you really look, he's literally off both feet in the air getting hit with shots. Why? What are you doing? Not jabbing. He doesn't jab anymore. He used to have a great jab. He out-jabbed Lomachenko. Lomachenko's a southpaw. Sandor Martin's a southpaw. You can say, oh, well, he's a southpaw. You don't jab that much against a southpaw. Okay, he did against Lomachenko. So I don't know. I was not happy with the performance, but ultimately I did have him winning the fight.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. Agree with everything you said. I do think it mentally first. We'll start there. After the Lomachenko fight, you're absolutely right. You know, not a lot of people were picking him. I actually was with him a few months before that. You picked him to win?
I picked Lomachenko, but I told everyone that I told his father says it all the time. He's like, you were the only guy who said that we can win this fight. I said, I'm like, he can win this fight because of the power differential and the size. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't really think it was going to go the way, but hey, look, the kid is that talented.
Yeah, so that fight, I do agree that that was obviously a blessing for him because it changed his life, but it also made more problems, more money, more problems. You know, ego inflated, circle gets bigger, more money. And obviously that rolled into the Kambosos fight. Some of the things that, you know, that whole saga, some of the things that he thought was going to happen in his career, and you know, the thinking that he was going to be a massive draw when he still is a draw, but it didn't match up to the things that he was saying. And when it comes down to it, man, I honestly think that, you know, his dad, and I'm not saying anything that is that no one, you know, this isn't a groundbreaking statement here, but I think his dad got him to a certain level. But it might be time to take a look and say, you know what, like, I might need a new lead trainer. I might need a new voice. But he is steadfast that his dad will be a part of his corner from here until the end. They have an unbreakable bond. But he's a good trainer, but he just lacks that voice in the corner. And you can touch on this. You know, you did change trainers. You obviously stepped into the ring. How important is it to have that voice of adjustments? Like, where was the adjustments last night? Where was the adjustments in the Kambosos fight? Where was the adjustments in not so much in the Campa fight? But I honestly think he needs a new trainer. And I'm not always one to say that you should go out there and make a change like that. He needs either Joey Gamache, bring him back in. I don't know why he got rid of him, because I thought he looked the best. I'm pretty sure he had him for Comey and Lomachenko. There has to be a lot of changes in his personal life, which are not easy. But one change you can make is bring in a good trainer, bring in a different voice.
Fantastic, fantastic point there, Dan. You mentioned Joey Gamache. Well, actually, let me just speak on my own personal experience first. I trained trainers multiple times, and I think I still kept, like, Keith Trimble, who was in my corner for literally every single boxing fight that I've ever had. And I never, just like he doesn't want to get rid of his father will always be in the corner. That's my relationship with Keith Trimble. He will be in my corner no matter what. I had other head trainers throughout my career, but I always had that. Keith was my rock, and his father can still be that for him. He can have a different voice, though. It's good to have a different voice. It's good that you it's semantics. There are certain words that hit you a certain way when you're in a ring, when you're in training. And also just from keep yourself from getting flat. It seems to me like Teofimo's gotten flat in his training, his preparations. So on fight night, his performances are a little flat. For such an explosive guy, I mean, his flat is still better than most people. But yeah, I agree. You mentioned Joey Gamache. He's a friend of mine. I think he's a fantastic coach. Was a very, very good fighter as well. I spoke to Joey at length about the kind of training that they did. And he said, Chris, I just work defense. He's like, he does a lot of defense. We do a lot of defense. He spars, he does mitts. Immediately after, we're on the noodles and we're working head movement and rolling in hand position, which was completely absent last night.
Yeah.
His defensive prowess has really fallen off. Didn't see that. He used to be really good at catching and shooting, rolling, firing. None of that happened last night. He was actually getting outboxed, getting out-defensed, out-slicked by Sandra Martin, who is a very capable boxer, mind you. If nothing else, Sandra Martin showed the game plan for how to beat Teofimo. Yeah. You got to box from the outside. You got to move. You got to slow it down.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you said before the fight, right? I said that Martin's going to come in there and do what he did against Mikey Garcia, slow the fight down to a crawl. Move around in there, pot shots. I didn't think he'd be able to execute it as well as he did. Definitely didn't think that Martin would be able to drop him arguably twice in the fight. And you broke up the defense, and I think the defense was glaring. Lack of defense was glaring from Teofimo. Footwork. I think it starts with footwork, right? Footwork, then defense. Simply cutting off the ring. Why didn't he cut off the ring? That goes back. It's all wrapped into one thing. It all goes back to the corner. Where was his corner saying, why didn't they teach or implore in their camp, all right, this guy's going to move in there. We know what type of fighter he is. Cut the ring off, because the entire night, Teofimo was chasing him around the ring. And while he was chasing him, following, he was getting peppered with right hands from Martin.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned it. I forgot to mention. I have a pad that I wrote down from the notes that I took while watching it. I don't have it in front of me. Following. He followed him all night long. Wasn't cutting off the ring at all. Was not making the ring small. And Sandra Martin wanted to move, and he was allowed to. Teofimo allowed him to be what he is. What Sandra Martin is, he is a pure boxer. The guy boxes and he's a southpaw. I talked about that right hook, that check hook. That was the most dominant weapon in the fight for either man. And he really, it wasn't a hard shot. He was just putting it there and having Teofimo run into it. Speaking of adjustments, first of all, I don't think I've ever seen Teofimo adjust in a fight. And he's either completely full blast and control and dominating, or You've got Nakatani fight where he didn't adjust at all. Same thing the whole night long. You had Kambosos, same thing the whole night long. Last night, Sandor Martin, same thing the whole night long. There was no zero adjustment. And even in the Lomachenko fight, it was an adjustment. He took control right away.
Well, he had a 7-0 lead too.
Yeah, he stayed in front. And the last rounds when Lomachenko came on and he lost almost all of those rounds, there wasn't an adjustment there either. Teofimo's never been an adjustment guy. He's a super athlete. He's very explosive. He's very talented. He usually gets ahead and stays ahead. And last night he needed to adjust. He had all the tools to do it. He just never made that switch.
You gotta adjust though, Chris. I mean,
I've always said the best fighters in the world, the champions know how to adjust. That's what I was best at. I was best at adjusting during fights. People have said I'm not as physically gifted as most of these guys. I don't have the amateur background or the experience of all these guys, but I was always able to stay sharp, stay in it, and adjust throughout fights. And we're not seeing that from a lot of these young guys. They're front runners.
They are front runners, and that's not to keep patting myself on the back or ourselves on the back. That's what we said in the lead up to this fight. Is Teofimo Lopez has told me since the first day I met him that I'm in boxing to entertain. Loves knockouts. Doesn't really like the basics of cutting off a ring or getting a decision win. That's not good enough for him. He wants a spectacular knockout, and he fights like that. And adjustments come from a good corner. Adjustments come from a clear mind. I don't know if he has either of the two right now. Afterwards, did you hear what he said? I don't know if I still have. Do I still have it? He asked a bunch of the top ranked people. I've never seen that before. Have you ever seen a fighter say that in the ring afterwards?
I've seen on their face them think it.
Right.
I've never literally said that. I heard them say it out loud where the media can actually hear you. But that just goes to what Teofimo. I mean, the kid has no filter. He just whatever he's feeling is what's out there into the ether. And I think that's part of the enduring love for the kid. Like it's pretty cool to see the honesty and to see him go through it. We've all watched him develop, and I mean, his heart is on. We've got that saying, his heart is on his sleeve, and you know. Our hearts as fighters are always on our sleeve. You always see us, you know, opening up our chest. But him, we see a window into his mind every fight week. And, you know, it's a wild place up there. What's going on in Teofimo's head is part of the show. It's part of the reason we tune in.
It's intriguing in a way.
Yeah, it's a train wreck you can't look away from. And you know, we've always tuned in, obviously, and he's always closed the show and been that guy. You actually heard his dad in the corner in the last round. Son, please, please. Like, basically, like, we need one of those. We need another one of those. You know, those moments that you used to do all the time.
That's like asking for, you know, going up to the plate and like, come on, please. You got to hit a home run here when a single.
Yeah, we need a home run, champ. You got to do it. But listen, the best guys do that. Do you remember Sean Porter and Terrence Crawford? I'm down.
Yeah,
I'm down. He's up. I'm not up. I'm down. Okay. That was his rear. Okay. Gets up, goes out, knocks out that round.
Yeah. I don't know what's next.
That's the best in the world.
Right. I agree. I don't know what's next for Teofimo. He doesn't have the luxury of a long rebuild or he can't sit out because he has this bloated contract with Top Rank. He is a big attraction any way you want to cut it, whether the people that show up or the people that want to see him fight next. He's rising the ranks still in the sanctioning bodies to get those title shots, and we'll get to those opponents in just a second. He doesn't have the luxury to sit out. You know, it's almost like ideally he would probably sit out for a while, or ideally they would probably give him maybe two more soft touches. I don't know if he could take that hit in terms of the public eye. So he's in like a precarious spot right now. And I don't doubt Top Rank because they have some of the best matchmakers and the best management. But they have a tough situation here with Teofimo.
I've got a hot take.
What, say it.
He needs to go back down. He needs to go back down to 135.
I agree. Will he do? Will his ego let him, or will his body let him?
Guys, weight classes are there for a reason. Size matters. Physics is real and size matters. He's just not as effective at 140. And if you compare him body type wise from 40 to 35, he looks exactly the same. He did not look like he gained any real functional weight whatsoever. I'm looking at bodies. I've been doing this for 20 plus years. I know about making weight. I know what physical bodies look like. I know what athletes' bodies need to do in order. He is not a 40 pounder. I hugged the kid. You know, I'm a big 40 pounder. I'm tall and I'm long.
Yeah.
He's just not one of those guys. At the elite levels, and Sandor Martin's not elite. At the elite levels, everybody's big. the top guys at 140, the Ramirez's, the Josh Taylors, the Rich, the Pro Graves, the even Zepeda, Barboza. These guys, Barboza, they're big guys. Yeah. They're much, much bigger than Teofimo Lopez is. And he hasn't put on the tissue to make that transition to 35 up to 40. He's just cutting less weight. I think he's the exact same size. And yeah. I still think he can make 135. And I think he can probably do it pretty easily if it really came down to it, if you really focused on that.
Right. If you're not going to change trainers, you're not going to make drastic changes. That's maybe one he can do. You bring up some of these other names at 140. I caught up with Bob Arum after the fight, and Bob, as always, blunt, dead honest. Someone asked him, "Do you think he's comfortable at 140?" No. Would you favor him over Progre? No. I would make Progre the favorite. He also mentioned, I think he can beat Progre, but that's just a promoter saying what he needed to say. But he said the most important things out loud, Bob, and that he's not comfortable at 140, which everyone with two eyes and any type of boxing knowledge could see. And he's not going to be the favorite over Progre. I think Progre could potentially stop him. I mean, he could drop him for sure. Same thing with Josh Taylor. Josh Taylor is big. Josh Taylor can hit hard. I would favor right now Jose Ramirez over Teofimo. A perfect fight, I think, for him. If maybe one more soft touch, and then I would think Arnold Barboza would be a good fight, because Barboza is not really a mover. He's going to stand there. It doesn't hit hard. Maybe that's next. But I think Teofimo can benefit. One thing he could benefit from is he is not next for any world title. Progre, I think, next fight has to be with Jose Ramirez. So he can get in line in that part. Taylor's fighting Catterall.
Fight.
It's almost like, you know, Teofimo, he's not getting any of these title champs. So put him in there with a Barboza, put him in there with someone like that. But Teofimo Lopez, it's a saga, and we're all going to watch it one way or another. And the beauty of it is we're going to see it all play out in the ring. He's already back in the gym. He posted on Instagram. He's working out in the hotel gym with a big cut on his eye.
That's because of his ego. That's not indicative of him progressing. That's more of an ego thing, because it's a little bit bruised. Yep. But I think we're both in agreement on a lot of points when it comes to Teofimo. That's exactly what I was going to allude to next. It's not taken away from him at all. I've been a big fan. I said that. I've personally spoken to the kid and his father many, many times. I like them both a lot. They're good people. I think the kid still has a lot left, but he's got to tap into that thing that he had, because he's missing it.
Same person from the Comey fight. Doesn't look like the same person that was having fun in there in the lead up to the Comey fight. And like you said, like, he made life-changing money in his career, you know, seemingly changed for the good, but it seems like it was just the opposite after Lomachenko. Jared Anderson, ruined my parlay. I don't care, because I saw a spectacular performance and the real birth of the next great heavyweight in boxing and
American
in the States. KO2 Jerry Forrest, first round, maybe could have stopped it towards the end. Anderson came out winging. Forrest came out winging. Forrest landed a few shots, but Jared Anderson landed a lot more. This dude, we said coming into this fight, if he was able to stop Jerry Forrest, we would say, okay, this is the second portion of Jared Anderson's career. And I was iffy if he could have stopped him. I definitely thought it was going to go over 3.5 rounds, which I was tweeting about and telling everyone that could listen, put some money on it. But wow, Jared Anderson made a huge statement. This undoubtedly, he is on a trajectory to be a huge star.
Yeah, I mean, one of, and I've mentioned this multiple times. I'm a big fan. I think his potential is so great. I've heard good things about him in the gym. Obviously, we're seeing great things in the ring. And listen, America needs heavyweights, man. We need a great American heavyweight. And I think Jared Anderson is that guy. I think he's
got everything.
He's on a track to be that. He's athletic. He's got the size. He's athletic. He's got the attitude. He's got the power. He's got the defense when he wants to. And you know, he's got it all. He's got a chin. He's been getting hit. I would like to see him get hit a lot less. But he's been getting hit almost all of his career because he loves knockouts. He wants to be in there. He wants to entertain. And as we know, that can definitely cause problems. I would like to see him get onto that a little bit more. I've heard from him, and I've heard from people in the gym with him. His defense is phenomenal, and his reactions and his movement, and his head movement, and his slipping and sliding is very, very impressive. He hasn't shown that in fights yet, which is kind of cool, because there might be another wrinkle to Jerry Anderson that we haven't seen that he's going to have to use later on. But dude, with heavyweights, it just takes one. So I really want him to be careful in these next couple fights coming up, because when you get into that higher level with these heavyweights, it takes one shot. So don't test that water early. If you don't have to get hit, don't get hit.
I think it only goes up from here for him. I read people are thinking, what's next? Jerry Forrest was considered a step up, and now
he is
a step up, and he obliterated him. So now it's like, all right, what's next? And I don't know if you saw this, he entered the ring with the Grinch mask on. So yeah, he's got a lot of charisma. I was able to catch up with him right after the fight. He was walking back to his locker room. He stopped and he looked into my camera and I said, what's your message to the heavyweight division? He's like, man, tell him to get the F out of my way. And he just kept going. It was a cool moment. And so what's next? Like, what are the types of fighters we want to see him in there with next? And I have a few that can all be possibly good opponents for him. It's Carlos Takam, Michael Hunter, yes, Martin Bacoli, Jermaine Franklin. That tier of fighter, I think, has to be next. And like we said before, Top Rank knows what they're doing. But he's got to get in there with, keep stepping it up. Find someone that's either on the same level as Forrest or just above Forrest. And I think some of those names are. Who would you like to see him in there with?
I like the Takam idea because it's not the most intriguing fight by any means, because Takam is honestly pretty boring, but he's very hard to stop. Only the tip top guys do it. He does have power. He's strong. He's physically very strong. He's durable. You get him in there, it's almost like a Jerry Forrest type fight. If you stop Takam at this stage, wow. You know, that's huge. It's a huge statement. But likely you end up going the distance. You tune him up. You win every round, which is also impressive. But that fight makes sense. He's a pretty high level opponent in terms of who he's been in with, and to be able to use that as a litmus test compared to the rest of the division, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, keep going in there against guys that are usually not handled with ease, and see if you can keep knocking them out, and then build that up. Not to the level like we saw Berlanga, like, oh my god, this KO streak, but like, you know, Takam, like you said, Hunter, like even like Jermaine Franklin, who was in a position, I don't know if he would even take that fight, Franklin, in a position after
that
what
makes
he did
no, that
Dylan
makes
White.
No sense for Franklin. That makes
right.
no sense for
he
Franklin.
He can go even bigger, unless Top Rank offers like some huge money, but Takam, I would think, is one of the guys. Bacoli.
Michael Hunter, unless there was some kind of outside of the ring bad blood trash talk, that fight, I wouldn't see that happening. That's a competitive fight, honestly. Michael Hunter's talented. So that could potentially be, you know, like a fight that would be like almost like a contender crossroads fight. So unless they get some kind of spat going, I don't really see that one coming. I still think that they're keeping Jared in that building a prospect type. And that's why the Takam fight makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Xander Zayas looked, I thought he looked good. He gave himself a C grade, a little tough, hard on himself. Alexis Salazar only been stopped once. Couldn't get him out of there, but I thought it's another, you know, solid eight rounds for Zayas. Had Edwin Diaz, the Mets closer, walking him into the ring with the Timmy Trumpets music. Crowd went absolutely berserk for him. He is a ticket seller. He is a future star. I thought he looked fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, he needs fights like that. He needs eight rounders. 15-0, 10 knockouts now. Still a very solid, good KO percentage. He's stepping up each time out. This was a step up in terms of a young, hungry guy who's going to be in there, and he's durable. That kid came to win. He wasn't just a walkover. And he's only been stopped, you mentioned, by Carlos Adames, who's a high-level middleweight. That was at 160, by the way. Mm-hmm. And Zayas is at 54. They fought at 54. So him not stopping him is not a knock on him by any means. But he got eight rounds in, and I like when prospects get rounds. It's important for later on in the career when the fights really matter.
He's going to be the guy, I've said this almost ad nauseum, he's going to be the guy that's going to be selling out the Garden in June for Puerto Rican Day parades. So, you know, nothing wrong with going eight rounds, like you said. Keep the train rolling. Edgar Berlanga was in the crowd, and it's pretty weird. You haven't heard much about Edgar Berlanga. Don't see him too much on social media anymore. He hasn't had a fight in 6 months. I think his last fight was in June during Hall of Fame weekend when he kind of bit the guy.
He's been suspended.
That's what it was. I just went to his Instagram, and he was on a treadmill, and he's like, suspension over. And I thought, like, Top Rank, like, took his social media away. But I put two and two together, realized he bit the guy, and he got suspended.
Right, so it's probably a good
normal sentence to say in the boxing world.
Yeah, how about that? It's normal for us to be like, he bit the guy, you know, like that's how not normal boxing is. But Yeah, I think it's probably a good idea for him to stay out of the spotlight while he's dealing with a somewhat of an embarrassing suspension. But like anything else, the news minute is very quick. The news minute is a minute in boxing, so it'll be forgotten sooner than later. And especially, it's what have you done for me lately when it comes to boxing. So as soon as he gets that next win under his belt, who cares?
Fun night at the Garden. Love a New York City fight night. Saw a lot of old friends. Sat next to Dan Rafael. Saw Tim Bradley. Gave him a big hug. Hall of Famer. Andre Ward.
Awesome.
Back ringside. Christina Poncher. It's awesome. I love when the fights are right in my backyard and I can hop right in there and, you know, connect with some fans. That was always fun. You know, some nice words from some fans about our show, which is always great to see. So all in all, great night at the Garden. Over earlier in the day. We called this, you know, we said it. There's value in this pick, and that's Luis Alberto Lopez defeating Josh Warrington. Warrington made it close in the second half of the fight. I thought it was all Lopez in the first half of the fight. A lot of headbutts from Warrington. That's nothing new. A few rabbit punches in there. A completely biased referee. All in all, Luis Alberto Lopez defies the odds and the circumstances, gets his hand raised. New champion at 126 and has some big fights lined up. This is a really fun fight.
Really fun fight. The right guy got the decision too. We said this is our pick. Who's going to get upset this weekend? It's going to be Warrington, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't understand how good Lopez is. I've called, I think, three of his last four fights. That guy is, he's a stud for one. Never gets tired. Oh, so well, he's a soccer player. He's got the footwork. He was a high level soccer player, and he's got great footwork. He's tenacious as hell.
Engine.
The engine doesn't stop. And actually, Warrington actually outlasted him, which was very, I was impressed. Warrington's a stud. I've been a fan of Warrington for a long time, but I knew he was not beating this kid that night. I think, you know, unless they robbed Venado, I don't think that, you know, he was going to lose that fight no matter what. I do believe the rematch is going to be a lot tougher for Lopez.
I don't know if there's going to be a rematch. No rematch clause.
Listen, this is the rematch clause. Well,
Top Rank is already, Top Rank has Lopez. They're already they want Conlon versus Lopez. Top Rank wants Conlon to be a world champ. I love Mick Conlon.
That's the wrong guy. That's the wrong guy to fight then.
Well, in what way?
I don't think Conlon beats Lopez.
Interesting fight. I haven't really put a lot of thought into it. I just know that the business side of things is going to give Conlon that shot. He was also in action this weekend and he beat who's that guy's name? Guerfi.
I never heard of that guy.
Guy got knocked out by other fight of the this year where he got like DDT. Remember that? He got like Guerfi's the one who he got caught up. I gotta try to find it now. It's gonna piss me off. But long story short, Top Rank wants Conlon in there with Lopez. Conlon was a round away from beating Lee Wood, which I think is the fight of the year this year, until he got awesome knocked fight. Out of the ring and landed in his father's arms, which is some of the most insane scenes ever. But there's a lot of good fights at 126. Bronco Lara, I got to pull up the 126 ratings, but you know the politics of boxing are going to allow for Conlon. I think he kind of deserves it too. Before we see a rematch with Warrington or any of the other fights,
as long as Lopez gets paid, that's what I care about. That guy, he's a champ now. He went to the backyard of his opponent, who is the in Leeds. He's a god, and he went there and took the belt from the champion. You know, give that man his paycheck. That was an impressive performance. He's a hard out for literally anybody. The kid's style is really difficult. I think Warrington will do better in the rematch, actually. I think he has a chance of actually getting his belt back, because it seemed like he figured him out late in the fight. You can't, because Lopez is so hard to get a read on. He throws punches from so many strange angles. He takes a shot well. His engine's great. But Warrington, toward the end, I mean, for Warrington to finish the way he did against a guy who has such a good engine, it shows you that he figured something out during the fight. And I think Lopez is a very talented guy, very awkward guy, and he gives literally everybody in that division trouble.
Yeah, we'll see if a rematch comes of it. I mean, wouldn't be shocked of any of the bunch, but I don't think there was a rematch clause or would have been talked about or exercised by Hearn right after. I think Lopez is going
to
go.
I would have told Eddie to make sure there was a rematch clause in there, because I didn't.
Well, he is the king of it. They call it rematch room for a reason. He's the king of rematches, but we didn't have one in this one. So Lopez now can go out there and find the biggest money fight for him. And maybe that's Conlon, because Conlon has, if one thing for Conlon, he has a huge, they put it in Ireland or somewhere over there. huge fan base. Put in New York, got a big fan base here, and a good guy, McCollum. Let's go over to our final. It's a preview. This is a review show, but we have a midweek fight. There's something about waking up at the ass crack of dawn and watching Nioa Inoue destroy an opponent while I'm in my bathrobe. And that's going to be on Tuesday, 6 a.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Nioa Inoue going to become undisputed at 122. I think it'll be the first time since like 1980 that a fighter become undisputed at that weight class. He's facing little-known Paul Butler. Minus 8,000 favorite, Nioa Inoue. Don't touch that. The over-under is going to be interesting. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do for this over-under. It's 2.5 rounds. I have not seen a over-under that low in a really long time. But this, to me, this is about anytime Inoue fights, I don't care who he's fighting, I tune in, and I think a lot of boxing fans do as well.
Yeah, this is just one of those fights. It's just, you know, the last belt to unify. I don't.
He's moving up after this.
Yeah, yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, he looks like he's growing out of the weight class. He's been extremely dominant. But listen, we're given, not that we're not giving him a chance, but you know, again, I think the weight's an issue. I'm wondering how Inoue is going to look, man. Like I said, he's growing out of the weight class. He could have a bad night based on weight. So, you know, there's always that. That's pretty much the only
chance. Let's find something. Yeah, let's
find something. I don't see it. I think he gets starched in 2 rounds, but that's just me.
So you're taking the under?
I'm taking the under.
Okay.
But I think it's a well-played risk to take the over because it's good odds. And listen, anybody can fight for 3 rounds. But
under's fun.
I mean, when I was watching Inoue, when I called the fight with Inoue and Donaire, and I'm a huge Donaire fan, and he's a Hall of Famer, a first bout Hall of Famer as soon as he does retire, it was otherworldly. It was the Matrix in there. The way that
so
he
fast.
Picked his shots, didn't get hit with anything. It was a perfect performance against a very, very dangerous guy. A guy he had fought already and had a tough fight with and got hurt with. He broke his orbital against Donaire the first time. And it goes out there and completely dominates him. So, I mean, in a way, is potentially the best fighter in the world, pound for pound. I think we're going to see another fantastic performance. And again, I can't wait because I love when the guy fights.
Yeah. Will you get up early and watch it? You're up early anyway.
I'm up early anyway. So, yeah.
I will get up early and I will watch that. I love that. I think I put a cup of coffee the night before and you know, get it ready. It's awesome.
I watch a lot of the Saturday night fights early Sunday morning anyway. So this is my normal routine. A lot of times I go to sleep early on Saturday nights and wake up in the morning and I have a plethora of fights to just sit and watch with my coffee.
That's amazing. Who is Paul Butler? 36 fight veteran, obviously by far his biggest test. He defeated Jonas Sultan in April to win that final belt, and that became a target on his back for Inoue. Probably the biggest, he's getting his biggest payday, so that's one caveat for Butler. He and his team missed the flight to Japan earlier this week, so you're ready. The odds are stacked against him to begin with. His team misses the flight to Japan earlier in the week. Travel snafus, great. Obviously, Nioh Inoue, you already know who he is. Some fighter fans don't know who he is. They're still like, wait a second, is that guy that everyone has in their top five, but they never seen him fight before? If you haven't seen him fight, you should tune in. If you have seen him fight, you know why you're getting up at the ass crack of dawn to watch him. 20 out of his last 23 fights have ended in a knockout, 12 of his last 13, the only one being the Donaire in that 2018 thriller. Punch stats, out of this world. Second in jabs landed, 8.9. He's only behind Golovkin. And once Golovkin retires, you're looking at the best jabber in the world, Nioa Inoue. Ranks fifth in plus minus. That's how many, your connect percentage versus your opponent's connect percentage. That's plus 14.7. And he's fifth overall in overall connect percentage. So he's very accurate. Has one of the best jabs. Has good defense, power. You got an entire country behind him. This guy is the goods, and he's moving up to 122. I don't know what's in store for him at 122 because there are not a lot of names. We thought as a siren, I think that's sirens indicating that we should end our show, and we will in a second. There is not a lot of names at 122 besides Fulton, and Fulton is now moving up to 126. So everyone was clamoring for Inoue to move up and fight Fulton, who is probably the best 122 pounder. So we got best versus best, but of course, boxing can't have that. Can't have nice things.
I don't know. I wouldn't. If I'm Fulton, I'm saying at 22, and I'm getting Inoue's first fight at 22 before he's really grown into the weight class. That's gonna be the best chance to beat him. I also think that Fulton has a style that could give Inoue trouble. That's the kind of guy it's gonna take to beat him. So if I'm Fulton, I'm going for that Inoue fight ASAP.
Yeah, but that's another top rank PBC. The whole. All right, obviously we love it. You know, that's the fight. I mean, that is a
that's the fight where if I'm Stephen Fulton. Get me this fight. This is the fight. Get me this fight. I'm telling you, get me
bigger
this fight.
Bigger guy,
this
is, absolutely.
That's what I mean. He's the bigger man. He's staying at the weight class. He's been growing into the featherweight division anyway. Anyway, he's moving up to 22. First time being at the weight class. I don't care who you are. Their first fight in a weight class is there's that caveat. You don't know that the guys are that size. Most guys, it takes time to really get mature and grow into a weight class. We see that with Crawford now. Crawford's a real welterweight. It took a couple years. I didn't ever think he was really like a welterweight until very recently. So it takes time to grow into a weight class. I think Inoue is going to need that time. Stephen Fulton would be smart to get him early. He might be able to get the monster when the monster isn't the monster yet at 22.
That's a good way to look at it. Well, hopefully we do get that. So that's it for this show. We'll be back on Thursday with our preview show for Michelle Rivera, Frank Martin, some of the other stuff that's going on in the world. We'll have a list. Maybe we'll have Ronnie watch another Rocky. We haven't done that in a while. And then we have our year-end show sometime, obviously, at the end of December. Hope everyone enjoyed our review episode. We'll be back Thursday, as always. Check yourselves at all times. I forgot my saying again. Stay out of DM.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.